Welcome to another episode of the Geeks for the Win podcast, the podcast where we cover all things geeky. I am your host, William, known as Poetic Soul 44 online, and we have our co-hosts as Stuart,
known across the internet as Casual Terror,
Henry.
What's going on, people? It's Knox.
And a very special guest from Open Forum Radio, Larry.
The geek returns, baby. Let's get it.
Let's indeed. I guess we can just quickly jump into our game topics. You know, we start the show normally with a bunch of game topics, and first up is Brink, the Classes trailer. Knox or Henry, I think you posted that up.
Yeah, I actually posted this because I think Brink is going to be probably, other than Battlefield 3, you know, coming later this year. I think Brink is going to be one of the other games that's going to take my Halo time away. And, you know, like I've said before, you know, I just like shooters that do something different. And this trailer in particular showed the different classes and what you can do. And I like the fact that you don't have to stay within the class and, you know, keep trying to level up a certain class. You can pretty much change your class on the fly depending upon what you need to do. So kind of like as like the stages change and as different objectives come into play, you get an opportunity to be able to change your class, and you can go back and forth, and you know, you can level up different ways. But I see it as being a totally different shooter. I think one of the developers said that they even took out the fact that you know, you can't get one headshot kills. You know, it's going to be strictly about, you know, managing your classes, gameplay, and just, you know, keeping the multiplayer going rather than just, you know, walk, die, respawn. Respawn. So, you know, what do you guys think about it?
Well, I'll say this. After playing the game at PAX, the operative class is really, really cool, because the operative class allows you to, once you kill an enemy, it allows you to mask yourself and disguise yourself as them. And I know Killzone kind of has that, but you could go through and disguise yourself as them until, I believe, you start attacking. But you can run, you can do all that other stuff. And another cool, innovative thing about it is that it allows you to pick up your team's communication. So, you know, when you play a multiplayer game, multiplayer shooter, and there's this AI jargon and chatter that kind of talks about what's going on and gives you a situational assessment.
Yeah.
Like, you know, hey, they're coming from the front, or they're coming from the back, or hey, I'm around back, or something like that. Well, what you can do as an operative in this game, you can jack their headset so you can pick up that chatter. That is cool. That is really cool. And so, and also, you guys know I can't cut anybody down if I had a 10-foot knife. And I'm not that good at a shooter. let's just be real here for a minute. But I will tell you this. This game, I was in there cutting people. I had like an 8-kill streak. And this is my first time playing the game, and I was in there just cutting people down. And so what that means by saying that is that it is actually accessible to people like me. And that, I believe, is what's going to be crazy. And you just get into free play, which allows you to play either single or multiplayer mode. And you know how Borderlands had that drop in, drop out without really interrupting the flow of the game. Same thing here. That's what's really cool. That is what is really cool. So you have one persistent character that is persistent on and offline, and that is what I think is awesome. That is what I really believe is awesome. So. Yeah, I am looking forward to that. And the other classes in there, they were all different, but it was cool. But that's that operative. That is the class, because you can get right there and you can line up. You can run behind all of your enemies, like when they're facing out. So like your actual team is confronting them head on, and you can just take people out from behind. You can start shooting them from behind. It's crazy.
Yeah,
it is cool.
That kind of reminds me of the spy from Team Fortress 2.
Yeah, okay, I remember that.
Yeah, because you could do the exact same thing, except for the communications.
But yeah, it's cool. I mean, Brink is going to be it. I mean, we've been talking about Brink for a long time, and I was wondering, well, how is Brink going to be different from Borderlands? Well, the difference is Brink is actually entertaining all the way through, and so I think that's going to be the major difference in between those.
Did you ask him if it was going to have any co-op or any, you know,
is it going to be co-op?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it has crazy co-op, sir.
They've said that co-op from last year. They announced 8-player co-op.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That is going to be ridiculous.
Mm-hmm,
My only concern is that if the community doesn't pick this game up,
yeah,
because there's been other, there's been tons of games I've been excited for, but the community for some reason just decides to pass on it because they want to play something else, or you know, and then a great game just, you know, dies off, at least in our community.
When is Brink supposed to be coming out?
Oh, same day as Deus Ex, May 17th.
Oh, yeah, my goodness.
That is going to be a packed day. Y'all don't even understand. May 17th is... No, I'm sorry. Not Deus Ex. Deus Ex is August 23rd.
That's August. That's LA Noir.
LA Noir and The Witcher 2 comes out on that day.
Oh, my goodness.
I told you, that day is packed. Oh, that day is packed. It is serious.
Can we say broke?
Boy.
See, yeah, that's one of my that's my big concern is, you know, there's going to be people probably who are not going to pick up the Brink because they want to play L.A. Noir or, you know, the Witcher, and because, you know, I want my good fun co-op game, you know, like you said, drop in, drop out easily, like Borderlands. I've been looking forward to this for a while, and I'm just afraid it's gonna, you know, not people aren't gonna pick it up in our community, basically.
Yeah, I mean, well, you got one person here because of the fact that I'm pretty high on L.A. Noir, but I'll probably pick up both because, like I say, I've been looking for a shooter. You know, peer pressure is getting to me on Crysis, but I just like what Brink is doing with the classes because did you guys see the fact that, like, if you make your dude, you know, a little bit larger or you make him really buff, you know, certain classes you can't pick because, of course, he's pretty much a heavy at that point. You know, but also he gets an advantage to where he can hold certain weapons and certain guns that other classes can't hold, you know, or things like that. So they it seems like they're doing a really good job of trying to make this a real good, not only accessible shooter, but also a very deep shooter. Like, you know, you can dive as far as deep in as you want to, but you can also, you know, on the surface, just pick a class and just start going, you know, and kind of learn.
Right. No, it does work both ways. So someone, you know, someone who's more nimble will have access to other skills and may be able to hold, you know, more a higher variety of lighter guns than someone who's a heavy. So it works both ways. And they've done a really great job because, yeah, they did kind of shut it down where there weren't really many one hit kills when I played it. And I'm telling you, I sat there and played that game for about 20 minutes, man, and it was just out and out fun. I stopped because I felt bad. I was like, man, these other people have been standing in line for like an hour and a half. I need to let them get here and play this. But, you know, it's gonna be good. But I think to Will's point, I think a good game is going to speak for itself. And even if people don't pick it up right away, I think that people will eventually pick it up. And I think that it will, because we have Zabara's Spirit Sheet and because we have such a cross-pollinated and interconnected community, I believe that it will still garner a following. I really do. So I don't think there's much to worry about there.
Yeah, I just want to quickly say, people, you need to update your games on Zabari's spreadsheet because I've looked and I see people who have certain games and they haven't updated. So you need to update it. But I think another concern is that fact that it's, you know, in the shooter category, and a lot of people are like sick of shooters. I think it's
also in the class shooter category. Yeah. So it's going to be compared to, you know, Battlefield. It's going to be compared to
Killzone,
Team Fortress 2, Killzone, those kind of games.
Well, but the fact that it's still a shooter, I mean, I think a lot of people are, because I even saw Golf Rat, you know, he tweeted that he had shooter fatigue and he was just tired of shooters, period.
Hold on. Somebody go check on that man, make sure he don't have some type of new strain of polio, because he don't say stuff. that's worrisome if you got the man Golf Rat over there saying something like that, man. But I mean, I was mentioning it before, you know, back on post game report that it's actually talking about guys. Maybe we have shooter fatigue, and you know, I brought that up then. I was thinking, you know, maybe people are kind of getting tired of it. But you know, of course, I'm always shunned to push to the side, as per usual. You know,
well, I mean, I understand your point because of the fact that, I mean, look at all the genres that have passed that used to be on top. I mean, when we talk about when the Nintendo Entertainment System, I mean, the technology was there for platforming. So every game, every other game, I mean, even, you know, a swordplay game like Ninja Gaiden, but still the majority of that wasn't swordplay. It was platforming. You know, every other game was platforming. Then, you know, Street Fighter came out and shut everything else down. It was all about connecting with the world through fighting, through punching, kicking. Mortal Kombat came, the adaptation of that. Then, you know, when, you know, success stories like Rainbow Six and, you know, Counter-Strike and stuff like that started to, you know, get recognized in the PC world, bam, Bungie came out with Halo and even before then, I mean, look at GoldenEye and Perfect Dark, you know, I mean, you know, then shooting became the thing to do as far as, you know, how we game. It kind of, you know, revolves around shooting.
Right. As I've said, I think that shooting, a lot of people say, well, you know, it's just a hot genre right now. And you know, the industry moves and ebbs and flows. It's kind of like a hairstyle or a clothing style. It's going to go away. But if you hang on long enough, it'll come back. But yeah. My point is that I felt like it was going away. And I do feel like it's kind of going away. But I think that when you make a solid product and if you can innovate, which is the whole point and the last proven point, if you can innovate and make it interesting and do something new that no one else is doing, then they don't feel like they're playing the same old thing, just with a different skin. And
well, also too, when you do that, you help push forward whatever genre that, you know, that you're putting the innovation in. Just like Street Fighter, I mean, mm-hmm. you know, with Marvel vs. Capcom, as crazy as it is, if you look at that game, I mean, that was the first time that, you know, the high jumps and the air blocking and the multiple combos, ridiculous. You know, I mean, just all the type of stuff was kind of introduced. Now, of course, with the introduction of Street Fighter IV, they kind of dumbed some of that down. They went back to, you know, their roots. But, you know, they still have it out there, you know, for you to play. But that's what I like about Brink, because I think that it's taken the class-based shooter further than like a Team Fortress, where you can just change and that's your one power and you can, you know, get a sniper rifle or whatever. But now they're taking it to the point to where, you know, the whole battlefield can change based upon objectives. And hey, now I can change my class on the fly. When a new objective comes up, I can change my class. So where the other team, they had four infiltrators, now they got four heavies because they're trying to break inside of our fortress. So that changes the battlefield totally, you know. I mean, I think Brink, you know, is one of those gems that'll push, I guess, the FPS is forward, and I guess kind of get it to adapt to where it needs to go or where they want it to go, I guess, when, you know, putting something new out there.
So yeah, I personally, I think I don't have shooter fatigue, and if you do, then you're just not playing with a good group of friends, because I mean, in the last week I've played Bulletstorm, Crysis 2, Halo Reach, what else? Black Ops, and I think Borderlands. That's five different types of shooters.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm ready for Brink to come out, so. And wow. I just go to shooters because, you know, that's just an easy way to play. You know, the controls are, for the most part, are the same, you know. The other games do have their own little flavor to them as far as, like, perks and, you know, classes and weapons go. So, I mean, I think each of the games are a bit different, you know, in their way. But I just my point was basically that a lot of people are talking about that they have shooter fatigue. So I feel that may reflect on, you know, how well Brink does. Personally, I don't have shooter fatigue myself. So I think the shooters do stuff differently. But, you know, I just opened my eyes when I saw Golf Rat tweet about that.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of weird, too.
Well, I mean, we have to understand, though, Golf puts in so much time in shooters. I can understand how he should have fighter fatigue like 7 months ago. So as much time as he spends in those games, it would only make sense for him, you know, to kind of be fatigued with that. So
yeah, that's how true.
Yeah, I mean, but you know, you kind of say it to somebody like that. I mean, you have other games to play. Just like right now, I'm playing through Dragon Age 1. You know, getting there so I can get to Dragon Age 2. When I finish that, I'm going to go back to Assassin's Creed Brotherhood. You know, I mean, I won't say it's your job, but you know. You got to kind of mix it up your own self. It's just like when I beat Assassin's Creed 2, I didn't want to jump right back into the Assassin's Creed world because I had other stuff to play. But it kind of gives your mind that rest that you need. So that way when I jump back into Assassin's Creed Brotherhood after I finish Dragon Age, now it feels fresh to me. So now, you know, I jump into Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, go back to Dragon Age 2, beat that. You know, by that time, other games have come out, so I don't get that fatigue feeling because, you know, if anybody felt it, I felt it because all I play is Halo. I mean, everybody knows that I play Halo, and now I'm forcing myself to kind of, hey, play Killzone, play this other game, you know, switch over to Dragon Age, and you know, that's how you won't get that shooter fatigue also, because you can get fighting fatigue, you can get RPG fatigue if you play if you play you know, Lost Odyssey and Dragon Age and Mass Effect. I mean, you can get that. I mean, so any genre you can get fatigued on if you play too much of it.
Mm-hmm. I hear you. It's a good point. I always keep my stuff in rotation too. So I mean, that's the reason why I don't hardly ever trade any games in. So
yeah,
that was not the case this week, where I traded in 8 games that I knew I'd never pick up again. Looking at you, Ninja Gaiden 2. I'm looking
at you. Oh man, fuck that game.
Thank you. Oh,
stay
man,
off my Ninja Gaiden, man.
Oh, believe me, I will stay off of it, and it will stay out of my disc drive. It is not coming back, player.
I mean, I loved Ninja Gaiden 2, the parts I was able to play, but then when I got to a certain spot and I couldn't play anymore, that's when I hated it.
Oh, yeah. I think that was the first time in my life I actually ever wanted to pull out a disc and crack it in half. It pushed me to that point, and I was like, you know what? You're going back, buddy. It started my return pile.
You got to adapt to the pattern and the recognition of the battle. Gotta adapt to it. Every boss is smooth sailing, I'm telling you. It's not smooth sailing, but I'm just saying, like, once you start to learn, like I was telling you, you know, last week we were in a party, Blue, like Ninja Gaiden is terribly hard, and it was made that way to stay true to the roots of what it is. If you can even put it on easy, and sometimes a little of those spots do kind of spike up, but to me it just never felt like it was cheap. Like, it felt like if I died, it was my fault because I didn't dodge correctly, or I didn't, you know, slash fast enough, or I didn't use my superpower or whatever. Like, it never felt terribly cheap.
Well, see, and as I told you in the party last week, it felt terribly cheap to me because I started off. I mean, I've played all the Devil May Cry games. I've played the God of War games. I've played all those games, and I know how to control the camera, and I know how to move, and I know how to play patterns. I started out old school games. I had to play on the Genesis, dog. We didn't have a password save system. We had no save system to be heard of whatsoever. So if you wanted to finish a game, you had to know the patterns back and forth. So I'm perfectly fine with doing patterns. However, that game just... the camera would move and then get stuck, and it wouldn't change fast enough. And when I had to take my thumbs off the stick and then I had to move, turn the camera, by that time, my fingers are out of the prime position in order to dodge, and then I'm stuck. You know what I'm saying? Then the enemy hit me, and it's taking like a third of my energy bar. Like, really? Like, that ain't even my fault. You know what I'm saying? So to me, that's why I was like, you know what? I'm done with you. But I made it all the way to the final boss, in the game.
Okay.
And couldn't get it. And so I was done.
Okay, Blue. Okay, now tell me about your childhood.
Well, you know, when I was a kid, the fire. I had to get that blow in there at Ninja Gaiden 2 because I really wanted to finish that game, because that was the one game, the original Ninja Gaiden, was the only one that made me want an Xbox. And, yeah, I tried to finish Ninja Gaiden 2, and I'm kind of glad I didn't get an Xbox just for that game, so. Moving on.
Yeah, but you know, you gotta take the good and the bad. We didn't have save codes, but we did have real blood. So,
yeah.
Yes, we did.
I guess moving on. I can just sit back and relax, and y'all can talk Mass Effect 2 DLC.
Let's get it, baby.
Yeah, this is Mass Effect 2 Arrival. I actually posted this up. Actually, I posted this up almost like a month ago because I guess they had kind of fouled up a little bit, and they let it leak on the PSN, and the achievement list was on there for the Arrival. Now we finally got a couple pictures, which you can go to thegeeksftw.com to check it out. But yeah, it's coming out on March. That's tomorrow, right?
Mañana,
yep.
Baby.
Oh, buddy. Yep.
Yes, sir.
And I'm going to St. Yep. Louis. No.
Hey, this is how I felt March when I went to PAX. March 8th, Dragon Age 2 came out. Oh. March 10th, I was in Boston. Not fun. Not optimal timing right there. So, but
Which is why I was one of the first ones to beat that game.
Yes. Oh, man. Getting me started on that. But yes, you were. But yeah, it comes out tomorrow. Dude, I've been looking forward to this. This is supposed to, a lot of people say it's supposed to bridge Mass Effect 2 and Mass Effect 3. Not necessarily. Based on the article, it's actually a side mission within Mass Effect 2. And could be completed anytime, like right after the mid mission. Now, this is not a spoiler, but you actually go acquire a device that allows you to go on to the final mission. But when you go on to that, after you finish that mission, it's rather early on in the game. After you finish that, then you can access this mission, the arrival, anytime after that. But it is thematically, it's supposed to line up more with what Mass Effect 3 is supposed to bring. And man, I cannot wait. My predictions are going to come true. I'm telling you, my Mass Effect 3 predictions will come true. I'm promising you that. Oh, it's going to be so good.
Yeah, I mean, I can't wait for it, man, because they're already saying that it's going to make that smooth transition tie into Mass Effect 3, which I'm sorry, people, but I don't think Mass Effect 3 is coming out this year. I think it's still coming out in January 2012.
Man.
I just don't see it coming out with the likes of, you know, another Modern Warfare X or whatever it is, Skyrim. I mean, there's so much stuff chugged in November right now, and there's no way.
Oh yeah,
here's my thing. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying. I mean, there's no way that they're gonna. I don't know because you know Modern Warfare is gonna sell you know millions, and then you know you have Skyrim where everybody's been salivating over that game. I mean, including me. I mean, and then you have, I mean, what else is in November? I mean, everything is coming out, you know, around Uncharted about that 3. Same time. Yeah, exactly. I mean, Uncharted 3, I mean, you know, even that, I just think that it would be smarter for BioWare to just, I mean, and then we just talked about fatigue. I mean, they just released Mass Effect 2 for the PS3. People are still high on Mass Effect 2. Yeah, people that are just now getting into the 360 that are buying Mass Effect 2, that are buying all this DLC, that are still playing it, finishing it, and to hit everybody off with another game that ties directly into it. I think it'll be good because of the story. You know, we get into it, it's rich, and it'll be ended. But I think that it would be a detriment to just the genre in itself because of the fact that, you know, it doesn't need to be out right now. I mean, it can come out in January and do, you know, way better numbers.
Here's my – I'm sorry. Go ahead, Stu.
I was just going to say, you know, we just got Dragon Age 2. You know, we've already got our BioWare fix for now, I think. You know, I can wait a little bit for Mass Effect 3, but, you know.
Here's my thing. Mass Effect is my favorite IP, period. It's my favorite game series, game of all time.
No.
Yeah. So let's go ahead and put it up there. I know you shocked by that. You know, pick your jaw up off the floor. But I will say this. To your point, BioWare will have a plate this year. If you consider Mass Effect 3 on the PS2 as a release, if you consider Dragon Age 2 on all three systems as a release, if you consider Star Wars The Old Republic as a release, and then you consider... I mean, dog, that's what? That's already three solid games. If you add Mass Effect 3 in there across all three systems, man, that is going to be a massive... That is developer of the decade type of release. Or developer of the year type of release schedule just in 1 year.
Yeah, but see, that's why I think, you know, that they should wait until January because, you know, what they usually say, you know, I guess the first quarter, well, I guess the ending quarter for them still includes January. So I think it'll be good. I think they'll make more revenue off of it. That'll give, you know, Old Republic a little bit more breathing room, and it'll give Mass Effect its own space because, I mean, regardless of whatever comes out in January, people will kind of be over that, you know, Call of Duty. They'll probably be about 20 hours into Skyrim. Okay, now I'm ready for something fresh rather than trying to, you know, I'm having a hard time as it is now trying to play everything new that's coming out, including DLC and, you know, everything that's coming out. I think that it would just be to their detriment to just release Mass Effect 3 amongst all those, on top of what you pointed out with all the different, you know, stuff that's coming out that they're, you know, releasing out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Will, did you want to throw your points in there? Because you have a couple of good ones, man.
Oh, I was just typing in the chat that the titles you talked about, as well as, you know, Gears 3 for, you know, Christmas gifts, people buying those, and you know, you also got all the Dragon Age 2 DLC that's coming out. I'm guessing they'll be coming out DLC this year. I mean, I would also think that any fan of Mass Effect wouldn't care if it came out in January, since that would, you know, it would definitely sell better. I would think they would want it to do the best it could.
I mean, and what way to keep Mass Effect on everyone else's mind? Because you had, you know, you had one come out in, what was it, 2009?
Yeah.
And then you had one come out. Then you had one come out in 2011.
2008, and then 2000.
Well, it was 2007 for the first one.
Right.
And then 2009 in the fall for Mass Effect 2, and then for Mass Effect 2 on the PS3 was January of this year. And then, I mean, what way to keep it than to keep bringing Mass Effect very, very consistently? That's the way to keep it top of mind and to keep BioWare and all the nominations for the top RPG of the year, you know? Because then if you think about their in-between years, that's when Dragon Age drops. So, I mean, they're trying to get themselves out there as producing something on a yearly basis, but not really fatiguing each of their series that they have, which for me, I think, and this is completely off topic, but for me, I think the thing that we need at E3 is for BioWare to release another IP, because that was the thing last year. They were showing the game, remember? At E3, they were thinking that it was going to be a brand new IP from BioWare.
Oh, yeah. Everybody was thinking that it was going to be some kind of multiplayer spinoff.
Right, and then it ended up being Mass Effect 3, which is great, because I love Mass Effect. However, I think in order for them to continue to leverage it and to not, as we were just talking about, getting fatigues on certain, you know, certain genres, but the way that they introduce it, to me, Mass Effect feels completely different from Dragon Age. Now, there are still some technical similarities, you know, i.e. the wheel, the dialogue wheel.
Yeah.
But the inventory system is vastly different.
It's still different. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There are just a lot of things that are different. So I think an introduction of a new IP, an original IP from BioWare, would be what is needed for them to really take over this thing. And I really think that just that section of EA could levy just blows against pretty much any other publisher, you know, withstanding Activision. So it's just me.
But now we also don't want to spread BioWare too thin.
True. So then again, Canada is one of the number one hotspots for creating new development studios because of all the tax benefits they give developers up there. So we, as I said, if they do that and they let go of their licensed material, I don't think they'll ever let go of Star Wars, since that's going to be their big thing. I think that's going to be their cash cow. They want to turn that into their World of Warcraft money-making machine, and which is fine.
Got it pre-ordered.
Do you really?
Yes, I do.
And you pre-ordered it already? I didn't know you could.
Oh, months ago.
Oh, damn. Wow. I need to do that.
So I'm sorry. Geeks listeners understand that when Blue steps on the mic, we're gonna derail into Mass Effect and BioWare somehow. It's gonna happen. But yeah. I to finish it up. Look, I am thoroughly excited for the DLC. I already have money in my account thanks to my boy Fadio. So guess what? I will have that as soon as it drops tonight.
Get them points.
Already.
Alrighty. And it's not really derailing when we're talking about it as a topic, so.
Okay. Good point.
But next is a topic I've heard discussed on a lot of podcasts because a lot of people are excited about it. Resident Evil 4 and Code Veronica HD remakes are coming.
Yes.
Yes.
And it's funny how you were just talking last week about Veronica.
I just said it last week. I was telling telling Stuart to find a Dreamcast and go get the Dreamcast version of Code Veronica. But lo and behold, I mean, they're bringing it out. I mean, I liked Resident Evil 4, but I encourage anybody, if you want to play a horror game and see where the likes of Alan Wake and Silent Hill kind of got that, I guess, that learning piece from, is Code Veronica was probably the best Resident Evil game that I played out of the entire genre. It had everything of the good of all the series, and it took different, you know, elements of horror, and not just the cheap jump scares that you get from, like, Dead Space. Not saying Dead Space is a bad game at all, but it knew how to build up suspense. It knew how to use the score. And I think it was one of the first games that actually, when you had different areas of like combat or whatever, like the music would tone down and it would also kind of fade out as things happened and as things kind of built up and as things kind of, you know, died down within the actual, world that it was based in. So, you know, I'm just excited about Code Veronica, and I'll probably be there day one buying it. Resident Evil 4, I didn't have a GameCube until very late in this lifespan. So I played Resident Evil 4 on the PS2 when it came out for it. But, you know, lo and behold, it's coming out in HD. So we shall see. What did you guys think of it?
Well,
had you guys played the originals, or do you have any memories of it? Or
this is blue. Yeah, I grew up playing Resident Evil, man. The dog jumping through the window is still one of the scariest things in video games.
Yes,
I don't
sir.
Care. If you ain't ready for that, now that's Resident Evil 1. If you ain't ready for that, then you're going to be like, oh, snap. Like, that really throws you off. But I think, to your point, Code Veronica was great. Like, the opening cinematic where they have her held up downstairs.
Yes.
And then she drops, she puts her hands behind her back and she drops the gun. And then she falls and catches the gun and shoots the barrel behind all the enemies and blows every one of them to oblivion. Classic.
Yeah.
It's a diehard moment that you will never forget. And when I saw that on a Dreamcast, I was like, I want a Dreamcast. Straight up. Like, that made me want a Dreamcast, right? Because I'd already seen Soul Calibur and I was pretty much locked in. But when I saw that, I was like, yeah, this is crazy. This is crazy. But ready for that. That's going to be great. And I really hope that it's going to be in the MT Frameworks engine that Resident Evil 5 was on, because people can say what they want about RE5. Number one, I enjoyed it. Number two, it was beautiful. It was a beautiful looking game. And so
I think that it veered away from what Resident Evil, from what the heart of Resident Evil was, because.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
More action.
Yeah, exactly. It was an action game. And, you know, I hate to do this all the time, but it was terribly Japanese with the controls. And why can't I move and shoot? This is not a horror game. This is an action game. But you try to make up for it by letting me stand still when I shoot to kind of build suspense. But it just feels ridiculous, you know. But I don't know. That's just my little hater piece. Oh, but
okay.
but I mean, I think that having people go back and play these games will show what Resident Evil is supposed to be about. You know,
to your point, I think you mentioned it on the last show, because you said that you hope that the trappings and the conventions of Code Veronica wouldn't hold people back. But I think that if they're just simply up-resing these games and adding in achievements and trophies, which I believe they are, I do fear that the antiquated mechanics and the steering tank-like mechanisms will really turn people off for RE4, despite it being a great game. I enjoyed that game, and I enjoyed as much of Veronica as I could actually play through on the PS2. I got on PS2.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed as much of it as I could actually get through, and I played it later after its prime release time, and yeah, that those controls got to me. So if those controls are the same, I think this generation's player won't appreciate it as we did. Because based on the because they're not exposed to the same limitations we were. So, go ahead.
Well, I think that the consumer that's buying these remakes or HD revamps or whatever you want to call them, it's just like when I bought, you know, Beyond Good and Evil, you know, HD. Like, I knew that this game was an older style game, so I knew that some of the stuff was going to be a little bit different. Some of the controls may be a little bit antiquated because of what it is, and you're only paying $15 for it or $10 for it or however much it is. So I think people, I don't know if these are going to be actual disc release. They didn't say that they were, but it says download, so... I suspect that there'll probably be, 1,600 Microsoft points, 1,200 Microsoft points, or $15 or so on PSN.
That's the main question.
Yeah.
What will the price be?
Right, exactly. But I feel like if it's $15 and they say, hey, it's a HD port or it's a remake, I think that audience is a little bit more forgiving when you see that, because you know, even if you're a young gamer, like, you know, remotely close that, hey, this is Resident Evil 4, so obviously this came before RE5. I mean, there's no excuse by making a brand new game, RE5, what it is, and it still has those type of controls and things that aren't of today's, you know, I guess, aren't up to today's refinements that have been made before its time. But I think you can be a little bit more forgiving when jumping into these because of the price. But like Poetic said, you know, I mean, the price may play a, you know, a big part, you know.
Yeah, like we said last week, $10 seems to be the sweet spot. I mean, that's how much Beyond Good and Evil was, right? The HD remake, it was $10.
Yeah.
And, I mean, so, especially since two are coming out, I'm not sure whether they'll come out, you know, 1 week and then a few weeks later another, or whether they'll come out, you know, day and day, both released at the same time.
Yeah.
That could also play a big part. But, you know, I've never really played a Resident Evil game, so that's also a reason why I don't think the movies are that bad, because I don't have the games to compare them to. But, so I'm definitely interested in playing, because all I've heard, you know, the last, what, over five years is Resident Evil 4 is such a great game. I've just heard praise from Resident Evil 4, and just recently I've heard, you know, Code Veronica was, you know, so great. Just recently I've heard about that.
It was awesome. Oh, Resident Evil 5, though, it really doesn't deserve to be overlooked. I mean, right now you can get Resident Evil 5 Gold Edition, which includes, like, some of the downloadable content. That has, doesn't it include the first replayed man, the first replayable mansion from RE1?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and which is what, the Lost Chronicles or whatever, and includes another pack as well. And those take you back more to the scary roots. Like, you feel that tension in the air when you walk into those environments.
Exactly. And scratching around for ammo, you know.
Yeah. Creepy stuff, creepy sounds, shadows, mind playing tricks on you, stuff like that. And dog, you can get that for less than $20 now, and it looks awesome. Like, it looks awesome. Yeah. And the great thing about Resident Evil is what people don't tell you, that always gets lost in the rampant and incessant criticism that it receives, is that the replay value on a Resident Evil game is miles beyond anything else. And I say that because you start a new game plus, man, you go into that game with so many different upgradable options, and you could come in with a infinite ammo powered up 45 that'll blow a head off a zombie in one shot. Yeah. The mini bosses in two shots. I mean, you taking cats down. You come through with a knife that'll cut cats in half. I mean, it's just like, that's just craziness. Like, when you say it's very Japanese, I take that as a comment, because those cats know how to have some just crazy, stupid fun. And
yeah, it's just like in Lost Planet. Like, when you beat the game, you can jump in and you can get these ridiculous ammo pieces. You can do the Marcus and Dom skins on the Xbox. You can do the Hellgas skins on the PSN. Like, they know how to, you know, give you that fun experience, but they also know how to have fun too within that experience. Like, they just let you just run wild. Like, there's like a Gatling gun where he has a big bullet pack on it. It's a big backpack full of bullets, and you can run through the game within like what, maybe 5 hours, just going through, just annihilating everything. I mean, they have jackhammer shotgun. I mean, it gets ridiculous. And the inventory system is awesome, where you can give back and forth. You can trade. You can give items back and forth. You know, and hey, I mean, they do that stuff very, very well.
See, now I want Lost Planet 2. I'm looking for Amazon right now.
Get Lost Planet 2 on the 360. Holler at your boy.
And you can't forget Dead Rising when you get through that one what's it called, task or whatever, you get the Mega Man blaster gun.
Oh, that is so fun. Yep.
Yeah. So the Japanese do know how to do games right. I mean, look at Dead Rising 2. You know, it didn't have that. It didn't have anything like that, because it was, Canadian developers?
Yeah.
Because they like to have fun with their games. Like so many times, like, I wish, like, I don't know, if I'm playing kind of like the skulls are on Halo, like, I wish that there was just a skull on there where you just put it on God mode. You know, where you just run through the campaign just being ridiculous, or make Gruntopocalypse through the whole campaign, where just tons of grunts just keep flooding from everywhere and just bowl them over or something. Like, you know, but that's what the Japanese genre type games do. I mean, they've done it in Lost Planet. They've been doing it since, I mean, man, you know, since, like, you know, here comes a new challenger in Street Fighter, where they have other different characters jump in, a little funny stuff, quirky stuff happens in Marvel vs. Capcom 3 all the time. So, like, that's one thing that they have down pat.
Definitely. But yeah, definitely think the price and when they're released, you know, will definitely play a huge part on it. I guess that's it for gaming. I guess the Captain America trailer, which I know I'm definitely, you know, I'm definitely excited about the movie. I think it's going to, it just, everything I've seen of it looks amazing.
Oh, yeah.
I
was saying this before the show. I kind of like this in this trailer. It shows, you know, the before, what Steve Rogers looked before he went into the machine and transformed. Because Chris Evans does not look good tiny. He does not look good without his muscles.
It just doesn't look right. I'm gonna cut that and save that as a file right there.
It took a minute to register with me, but I got it.
But yeah, definitely. So what did you guys think of this trailer? I know a lot of people didn't really like the one that aired during the Super Bowl.
I didn't like it either because it just felt like it felt like it was just pieced together, but this one actually gave you a little bit more of the actual story of how he, you know, enlisted. And man, I mean, just like, you know, Stuart pointed out, I mean, what he looked like before, you know, the transformation. And you know, just from the wardrobes and I guess the period, like I love that stuff when everything looks so pristine and they have the old school wardrobes and the, you know, just everything looks perfect with that time. Like at first I thought his young looking look would be too young for Captain America, but after the transformation and seeing what period they have it in, which is like during World War II, right? Correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they have it in that time period, so it makes sense for him to have that young look. So I'm glad that they did choose somebody like Chris Evans. Now, you know, I mean, dude been working out, you know, like I was saying before the show. I mean, he's put on straight muscle. I mean, he's even bigger than what he was in Fantastic Four. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, he built himself up to the part. So I think he can pull it off, man. I mean, if in the Avengers movie he can be a little bit more stern, or if he shows that leadership quality in this movie, I think it'll be great.
Well, it's funny you mentioned the Avengers. The problem is whether he can overcome or whether the director, you know, Whedon will put the captain in charge versus, you know, Iron Man and Tony Stark, because it just seems like Tony Stark's personality, you know, Robert Downey Jr.'s Tony Stark's personality would just, you know, overshadow the captain. I mean, we don't know. We really don't know the type of personality Chris Evans, Captain America, is, but as far as, you know, we know Robert Downey Jr.'s Tony Stark, that's one of my biggest concerns.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's another thing. I don't know if I haven't really been following this closely. Have they said whether this movie takes place, like, I know the trailer all took place during World War II, but does any of it take place after he was frozen? Or is this all before? And that's kind of how it ends.
Well, in the trailer,
getting frozen,
it shows him in some kind of chamber, but I think that was during the transformation, right?
Yeah,
I'm guessing he gets frozen at the end, and then the Avengers is when they unthaw him or whatever.
That's
kind of
what I'm hoping.
Yeah, because if you watch Iron Man 1, when Miss Pepper Potts goes downstairs to give Tony the little present gift or whatever.
You see the shield?
Yeah, the I guess he's trying to make refinements to it or whatever, and he's got it kind of like pieced apart a little bit, and then I think he actually takes the shield at one time and he puts it in between, he sticks it somewhere, doesn't he? He sticks it like in between some piping or whatever.
Wasn't that a deleted scene though?
Yeah, that was. No. Yeah, that was. Oh, yeah, that was.
No,
that
it
was a deleted
scene.
It
was a
movie.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And because I just watched the Blu-ray about 10 days ago. So I remember watching that scene and she was like, "Do you know what that is?" He's like, "Oh, yeah, that's right. I need that.
Oh, yeah.
And then he lifted it up and he said, "Put it under there. Slide it under there. Come on, put it under there." Yep. And so so pretty much. Yeah. He used it as a prop to help make a new
the new chess piece.
To help make the new energy.
It was the Hulk where the deleted scene then, I guess.
Yeah, I think
where he's trying to off himself or whatever in the Arctic area, and then you see the glacier with Captain go by, or
yeah,
I can't remember.
Something like that.
I missed that. I gotta go look at that.
Yes, in one of those where you go to special features and you can see it.
I need to brush up. We need to call movie. Ace because he has every superhero movie ever made. We need to call Ace. So, yeah, but now I think it works. As I said, you know, I think he's put on about 15, at least 15 pounds of just straight muscle, maybe 20. I mean, he bulked up a lot for the part. And, you know, of course, we all know he has the ego. We all know he has the camera presence to be the captain. I think he does. Robert Downey is just one of my favorite actors, period. So I'm going to love when he's on screen more than I like when the captain's on screen. That's just me.
Yeah.
But all these characters are going to be extremely strong. So, I mean, if you think about the possibility of them even running into some X-Men, I mean, if you just think about that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and you think about
Hugh Jackman. X-Men's owned by Fox, sadly, so
you wouldn't see that, sadly. The lack of studio crossover, yeah, I forgot about that. But it just, I don't know, I still think it would be good, though. I mean, I really do. My question is, now, have they, I guess talking about the Avengers, the Hulk thing.
It's not going to be Edward Norton. Him. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like
Ruffalo or something like that.
I think Norton did a great job. Like
I loved him. I thought he was Bruce Banner.
He did. They just don't want to pay him. That's all. They just don't want to pay him. That's all it is. Because
go ahead.
Well, he was even saying that he desired to see it get done. He was willing to kind of, I guess, negotiate, you know, his contract and find out what they wanted to pay him. But they were like, nope, we're just going to choose somebody else.
Mark Ruffalo Ruffalo.
Ruffalo.
Yeah. Ruffalo, whatever. He doesn't really look like Bruce Banner to me. But...
No, I remember we talked about this a while ago when that was first announced, and we didn't think that he looked right.
Yeah, hopefully he's in Hulk form most of the movie, though, so you don't see see the actual actor. But, these two movies, and kind of looking forward to Thor a little, but I'm definitely looking forward to those movies. I mean, coming up in the next few months is the start of what I'm calling, you know, the best time to be a movie fan, because there are just so many movies coming out this summer long.
Yes, sir.
I don't know how I'm going to afford it, because a lot of these I want to see at the theater. I mean,
yeah.
I just gonna have to. I don't know. It's gonna be crazy.
I don't know if you guys listened to. We did this. We never got a chance to really put it out because the end of our show kind of messed up a little bit on OFR. But we went and looked at the IGN list of all the movies in the summer. And dude, there are about six of them that are just gonna be ridiculous. It is just a ton of movies. Because don't forget, you have Transformers coming out. You know, you have Hulk. Not Hulk. You have Thor, Captain, Green. Is Green Lantern coming out this summer? Yes. I mean, you have all
Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yes. That was on the list. I mean, there are just so many movies coming out like really soon. It really is ridiculous.
We have, you know, well, I guess suspected, but we have good blockbusters coming out. I mean, we don't have, you know, 27 Dresses and, you know, a bunch of others and the like coming out.
Right.
Yeah.
X-Men First Class, too. Forgot about that.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That comes
out. I counted 11 that I wanted to see that comes out, like, around the summertime. It's just ridiculous. I'm just going to have to pick and choose, sadly.
Well, what I am, too.
Sophie's Choice?
Uh-oh, excuse me. Sorry. Yeah, so many movies. But, yeah. I'll try to include this so you guys, if you want to put it in your show notes or whatever, you'll have a link to it. But we actually went over this, like the summer movies list, and I'll find it here on IGN and excuse me, give it to you guys. Sorry, hiccups.
Alrighty, cool. I guess sticking with movies, looks like Redbox and I guess Netflix is gonna have some competition soon.
Some more competition.
Yeah, more competition. Spot movie rental service. I guess it's a competitor to Redbox, just like the box rentals, but
10 cents cheaper.
Yeah,
true. But
Blu-rays are also a dollar. That's the difference.
Yeah,
not just two, but one.
Yep.
That's half price. That makes a difference.
Yeah, that's the main. Yeah. That's the big difference.
It is.
I wonder how it's going to really do, because, I mean, a lot of people, you know, they know what Redbox is. They see the box and they can recognize it. I mean, and they're familiar with it, and I think people don't like changes. You know, they once they become familiar with something, that they stick to it. And I mean, I you know, go by a Walgreens that's right by my house every day, and I see people at the Redbox. Yep. I always see people at the Redbox. Back when we had the snowpocalypse, there would be freaking people at the Redbox when we're trying to go, when we're trying to brave, you know, the ice and snow to get water and
get to the Redbox.
Wood for fire, and there's be people at the Redbox. I mean, during snowpocalypse, so I don't know.
I don't know. This kind of does look like the Redbox, only it's orange, and it's, you know, it's got its price in big letters saying like, hey, we're cheaper. So I don't know if these get in the right spots, I think these could beat out the Redbox.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing, just like, you know, Blue was saying, is the 50% decrease in Blu-rays. I mean, that piques my interest, just seeing that
don't
dollar.
Don't you have to rent two though to get that price?
If you rent two, you get 89 cents. You get it at 89 cents,
right,
no,
right,
instead of 99 cents a piece. So you still get another price break if you rent two, at least according to the article. To me, that dollar for a Blu-ray is on point. But yeah, also keep in mind now, it may compete directly with the movies, but some red boxes now rent games.
That's what I was about to say.
Yep,
yeah,
exactly. Yep. That's another factor too.
I mean, when they're trying to play catch up, you know, Redbox is introducing games, and I know as soon as, you know, the Redboxes down here have games, I'm definitely gonna, you know, be using that. You know, how much is it? Like $2 a day?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's
your
Redbox
has games?
No, mine doesn't. But I'm waiting.
Yeah, mine doesn't either.
I'm waiting because once that happens, you know, there's no. I can just $2 a day to see whether I like the game or not.
Oh yeah, I'd be $2 it a day on Crysis is what I would be doing.
Oh, but so. Crysis, that's the game of the century according to Ace. I mean,
yeah, according
you
to
gotta
Ace,
buy it.
Gotta buy that dude a sponge and a soap bucket.
Gotta buy three copies of it. I mean, come on.
But
I think we do a new phrase. I'm $2 it.
You two bucking it. Oh man, it's gonna be interesting though, just to see how everyone is having it, because all my blockbusters around here are gone. They're going out of business now. The one over by our church, which is the closest one to our house, we had one on the express, which is right by our house. We had one less than 2 miles away from us that shut down, and then they moved it. And then the one over here by the church, which is within about 8 miles of us, 5 miles of us, it shut down as well. They're shutting down all over the place. And Blockbuster pretty much pioneered renting, you know?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
But it's strange.
But they failed to recognize the market and where it was going.
Yep.
And they jumped in too late.
Well,
they jumped in half-assed, too.
Yeah.
What they did here, like, I don't know if it's still there or not. I haven't looked. But they closed down our Blockbuster and then put out front a box, a blue box.
Right, right. And that's pretty prevalent, believe it or not. There's a blue box in the closest gas station to our house. There's a Blockbuster box in the gas station right near our house. But here's the thing. A lot of people misunderstood that Blockbuster has a plan. You can rent movies and games for the same low price. It's just a little bit. It's like a couple of bucks more expensive than Netflix. But you can rent games and movies. But they're just not as ubiquitous as Netflix is. You can't get the Blockbuster streaming app everywhere. Like, it came on the what's the 4.3-inch phone the Sprint has? The Evo.
Yeah.
It came as an app exclusive to the Evo.
Yeah.
I have an Android phone. I still can't find the Blockbuster app.
Yeah, it was on a couple of televisions too, but they didn't make it known. It was on a couple of Blu-ray players too. I think it was one TiVo model they made, it was on there too, but you know, if you don't go digging for it, you wouldn't even know it.
That's right. Where half-assing it comes into play.
Yeah, I hear you. No, Will, I'm supporting your point, man. Yeah, they came in half-stepping. And you can't do that in an industry where you have a consumer who's wanting it now, and they expect to get it any which way they can. They need to be informed that it's there. They need to be shown how to get to it. that needs to be effortless for him, really. It really has to be.
I mean, back when Blockbuster was, you know, was still a viable company and not going bankrupt, they had a great plan, but they just didn't support it well, where you had the Netflix option and then you could return the movies to your Blockbuster and get, you know, like a couple, like two rentals from there straight away without having to wait.
Right.
I mean, that was genius, but it would just take forever for them to send out the movies and you to actually get them. Netflix, it's like a day.
Oh yeah. And you know where we are. There's one right out here outside of Oklahoma City. Literally, if I put one in the mail on Monday, they get it Tuesday. And they turn my order around on Tuesday, and I have a new movie back to me by Wednesday.
That's it. That's it.
Same here.
I'm telling you, same here, man. It's so incredibly quick. Like, we can send off. I got Predators in the mail from Netflix today. I can send it off. They'll pick it up in the morning, and I guarantee you, I have a movie here by Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, I mean they just sent Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood the remaining two discs. That were just released, that actually they released tomorrow, but they sent it today, and it's going to get here tomorrow, so I'll have it on release day.
Nice. I didn't know you like Full Metal.
Oh, I love it.
Shut your mouth.
I just got into Brotherhood, side tangent, recently, and I've just been waiting for the final final 20 episodes for English dub to come out, and can't wait.
See, I watched them in Japanese a long time ago.
Other side tangent too. What's the difference between Full Metal Panic and Full Metal Alchemist?
I don't think they're related.
Different thing?
Yeah, they're two different series.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I first saw that, I thought maybe they were, you know, the Full Metal, and I thought that. But then when I looked at them, you know, looked at the box arts, they were just completely two different, you know, styles.
Yeah, one's about robots, like, you know, the mechs. Kind of high schoolers in the mechs, and the full Fullman Alchemist is just something else. It's awesome.
Oh, okay.
Pure awesome, yeah.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Well, but, I guess since we're talking about distribution of different movie titles, you want to go on to the next topic?
Oh, definitely. I guess Paramount Pictures is going to distribute a movie through BitTorrent. That doesn't seem that... That just does not compute for me, but...
right.
Is it a trap? I mean...
Yeah.
No, right?
As someone who has been caught, you know, downloading movies and has been warned and haven't done it since, I'm kind of worried.
But if they're putting their stamp of approval behind this and they're actually, you know, they actually have this on their page, I don't see, you know, I mean... Maybe this could just be them testing the waters and see if this could work. Because, I mean, so many developers, people, publishers, companies, businesses are going the way of downloads. I mean, it's scary because I still like to have my box art and my, you know, cases all neatly stacked together and everything. But, I mean, you know, I mean, this may be the way. I mean, these companies may start making their own P2P groups and, you know, distributing and charging for it and things like that. You know,
as I said before on OFR, as many problems as we have with Pamela and Skype, no way. Like, I want to have that physical copy, because I know even if all I have is electricity, if I don't have internet, if I don't have any of that, I'll still be able to entertain myself and access those things that I find that I take joy in.
Oh, yeah. I'm a big advocate of brick and mortar, physical copy, you know, have in mind there, because, you know, if it's mine, I can distribute it to who I may. I can let them borrow it. You know, I can set it up. It's there on my counter. I can pick it up whenever I want to. But I guess just the lazy person in me, like, perfect example, my brother's Halo disc got scratched. And I was like, man, I ought to just give him my Halo disc. I say, I play Halo all the time. So,
right.
I don't want to get up and take it out of the case and pop it in my 360, download it off Marketplace, expensive as it may be, go ahead and buy it, download it, so it's always on my hard drive. you know, so I don't have to get up and do that extra step. Now, with this type of thing, with BitTorrent, I mean, downloading the movie from the BitTorrent, you download it, stream it. A lot of us have Xboxes and PS3s, Windows, stream it directly to your television. Boom, it's on, it's there. You didn't have to get up at all. I mean, it's there. I'm not saying do that, you know, I mean for every movie, but if they find a feasible, you know, price amount, you know, versus the amount of time that you got to take to download it, I think it'll be awesome. And plus, if you download it, I mean, then you finally do own it anyway. So if you wanted to, you can burn it to a disc and keep it, you know, in your personal library.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's not the only reason people burn discs.
Yeah, I know.
Let's be real. Just go to any barbershop around the United States.
Yeah.
Find a bootleg of anything. That's how I got the Cat Williams stand up. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, my goodness.
So, but I don't know. I think, yeah, as Stu was saying, and we were both saying, it's a trap. They do have a massive distribution network, but the reason that they're not going to ever do anything and make a real deal about that is because a massive distribution network that garners no revenue for the company actually making the product. So
indeed,
that's the issue.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I just think that they can do it just like any other service. I mean, be that as it may, as far as the BitTorrent, but say, for instance, you know, I guess The Matrix, and you know, The Matrix packet is 3 gigs or whatever. Like, just charge per packet of information. I mean, just regardless of what it is, per packet of information. And if you download it and you have a site that you get it from, charge per packet or you know, just something. I mean it can be done. I just see, not as in like BitTorrent is going to be the next distribution system. I just think that it can be done in some way, shape, form, or fashion. It doesn't have to be in the BitTorrent kind of criteria, but it can still be done, though.
Yeah, what I think, I mean, I don't think BitTorrent's the future, honestly. What I think the future is like apps, like, you know, have an app, a Paramount, you know, movie app for, you know, Android or the iPhone, or even, you know, just have a desktop program, or, you know, just where you can go and, you know, buy the movies and stuff like that, you know, easily.
But do you think that bypassing their digital distribution partners would be such a great idea? And do you think that they would really want to do that? I guess they could try to cut out the middleman by doing that, but
they could still have on like, you know, the Xbox Live Marketplace or, you know, all the other, you know, digital distributions, but it'll just be a second, you know, another choice, another option.
Yeah, because if you look at Zoom Marketplace, you know, they're kind of going the way of what William is talking about. Like, when I boot up Netflix, like, sometimes if you guys are on Netflix, it doesn't say, you know, your friends are playing Netflix or whatever. It says your friends are using this app. I mean, if you look at the Zoom Marketplace, like, they have, you know, little bold squares that say Paramount, Universal, ABC, NBC. You know, it's kind of going that way anyway. But I see what you're talking about as far as the distributors and trying to get around those guys, because everybody wants their cut. So I do see that point too.
And especially since phones now, newer phones are starting to get the DNLA streaming, you know, where you can hook it up to your Wi-Fi network and you can stream the stuff off your phone to your Xbox and stuff like that. You know, phones are starting to be able to do that. I think that will just play a big role. I mean, I'm not sure how big of a role to the average, you know, average Joe, but as far as our generation, you know, as we're upcoming, I can definitely see that being the future.
I guess I just wonder, because right now, Blockbuster had the 28-day lead in on new movie titles over Netflix. That's what they used to advertise. Remember that they had 28 days over Netflix. And so you would be able to rent a movie 28 days before then. But at the same time, now your cable provider actually provides the movies like 3 weeks, you know, after release, or two weeks after release. And then you have Netflix falling in line, and then you have these online services like the PSN, though, and like Zoom Marketplace get stuff. Like, the day Despicable Me came out, it was there.
Yeah,
I could get it.
Yep.
And it's like there are all these various different ways in order to consume your entertainment and to consume services. But what if you remember back at CES, Verizon's whole infrastructure was set up to bring everything together, to aggregate all of those different ways that you bought your media from wherever you bought it from, and to make it all accessible to you. I think that's where the market's going, and I think that because it's going to all be consolidated into one particular way in order to, so you can consume it any which way you can, but from one particular base location, that I think the singularity and the distribution may force or push the singularity in which the actual movie is received from the studio.
Yeah, but my only thing is that in that singular consciousness, or that Borg like structure, to be geeky, how does everybody get their cut? You know,
I hear you. Well, you know, right now with all the pre-order bonuses people got going on, Amazon, you get one case, somebody else, you get another case, and, you know, talking about for L.A. Noir, you get another suit over
don't
here.
Don't even give me, we talked about that last week, don't even get me started.
I know, we talked about it too, man, and it's just, you know, with all of that, people going to find a way to get their cut. They're going to find a way to get their cut, but my question is it, just because you're a retailer, are you entitled to have a cut? That's my question. I don't know.
I don't know, but quickly, I just want to mention something that actually I thought was awesome that happened this past year, last year. The Survival of the Dead, the new Romero movie, or the newest Romero movie, that actually came out on Xbox Live before the theater, like 2 weeks before the theater. You were able to watch it on Xbox, pay and watch it on Xbox Live, and then I think it went away, and then it went on the theater.
Wow.
I'm really surprised that nothing else has tried that, because I think that'd be something really cool. I think Microsoft or, you know, Sony would have, like, could do some really amazing stuff and really, you know, catch the, or, you know, gain even more of a lead, or gain the lead in the console war if they could do something like that. I think that would be pretty big.
But here's something I could say that would hurt them. Because, you know, everybody put so much, behind box office bucks. I can't think right now. The box office numbers, like how much they make within the first week. I think that would hurt that a lot, because like you're not getting, well, you would have to get what people paid for Xbox, and then add that on to what they got in the movie theaters. I don't know.
I mean, it's just, you know,
I'm trying to say something. Get to the
point, when does it get to the point where the, you know, the theater becomes irrelevant, and we're just, you know, it's just our house. We don't, because I mean, I'd love to be able to just, you know, pay six or however many dollars it is and just watch the movies at my house, you know, and not have to go to the theater and sit in the broken seat that's, you know, the floor all sticky next to, you know, some chattering couple, and or what, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
I paid like $10.
My movie theaters are awesome.
But see, those awesome movie theaters cost, you know, me and my wife talk about it all the time. I mean, we sit here. I got a full surround sound system, and even if I didn't, I mean, now they have, you know, they have the the sound bars, you know, where you can get like kind of like a virtual surround sound. Right. And we always talk about going to the movies, and we're like, man, by the time we get through doing that, we've already spent $20, you know, ticket for me, her, you know, if a guest goes or whoever, whatever. Then we go out, we're like, I can wait for it to come out on Blu-ray. I mean, it'll be out on Blu-ray in 2 months, you know, or whatever. Right. And then we'll watch something else or whatever. So that's kind of the thing. But me personally, I still get a kick out of getting an experience by watching other people feel the experience with me in the movie theater. So I still love that. But a lot of people don't have that passion, you know, for, I guess movies just in general, just having that, I guess, I don't know how to explain it. Having that experience that even though you don't know these people, but you're still experiencing the whole laugh of the crowd, the groan of the crowd, the cries, you know, the sighs, you know, that stuff makes your experience too. For at least for me, that kind of makes mine, you know, when I go to the theater. That's why I still like the theater, but so many people don't have that same experience. So they're like, I'll just wait, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah. But I think I would just love to see the option where you could, you know, just, you know, get the movies that are at the theaters on your screen if you wanted to. I mean, I would love that option, because there are some movies where I do want to see it in theater in that on that big screen in the, you know, the all its glory and the sound quality amazing and whatever. But there's some movies where I'm like, I really want to see that, but I don't want to go to the theater and have to deal with that to see that movie. And a lot of the times I don't end up seeing that movie and I end up forgetting about it when it comes out on video or DVD.
But let me tell you why. And here's the fundamental flaw in that, because movie companies will probably never do that, because let me tell you something. Star Wars Episode One came out in 99. I stood in line with two of my homeboys who aren't sci-fi people at all. I'm talking about in nowhere near sci-fi. And we were so hyped after seeing that Darth Maul scene and the movie ended. You couldn't tell us that Star Wars Episode One was the greatest movie on Earth at that point. Like, you could not tell us that. Like, this, I mean, the same thing. I mean, but it's that initial romp spectacle, whatever you want to call it, you know, the talk, the word of mouth, the excitement. That's what get people get. That's what charges people up to go back to the theater, to go back and buy another ticket and go back in and watch it again. Like, that hyperbole builds those ticket sales, and that's the reason why they won't do the whole home distribution thing.
Well, here's the thing. Also, I mean, the margin is much higher per attendee at the theater than it is per rental, where you can have a multitude of people watching it when you rent it. And so I hear you guys on that. But yeah, it's the social experience that you pay for when you go to the theaters. Now, mm-hmm. Will, unfortunately, your social experience kind of sucks.
Well, it's not that bad. I was just trying to make a point. It's not that bad, but I'm just trying to make a point, you know?
Oh, no, I got you. I got you, man.
That's the worst that theaters can get.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they can. They can. But you're right. Like, I still remember going to watch The Matrix my freshman year in college. And there were not many African Americans on our campus, and literally almost 90% of the African Americans on our campus packed out a theater to watch The Matrix when it released. And dog, that was still the funnest movie I've been into to this day, because everybody was just tripping. You heard a dude in the front like, "Oh snap! Did you see him dodge that bullet?" I mean, just the whole theater just erupted. You know what I'm saying? And it's just stuff like that that you just like, man. Now that's what you go to the movies for. I mean, like that one dude that just got the craziest laugh. You know what I mean? And sometimes you get that baby that's crying, or you get that cell phone that's ringing, and sometimes that happens. But for the most part, everyone is in there, and at some point, it's just the basic Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You feel like you belong because everybody in there has the same general interest. They all
see that. Yeah.
So that's what you pay for when you go to the theaters. And those are the things that really kind of keep it fun. And even though DVD sales account for about 50% of revenues, they will account, because, you know, those are perpetual in nature and they keep going. And so, you know, because as I said, you could have paid $8 at the theater, or you could pay $20 when you buy it when it comes out on DVD. You know, the choice is yours. But a lot of times I'm like Knox, man. I kind of forego, and I say, you know what? I got the PS3 in the living room on a 60-inch with a surround sound system. I can watch it when it makes it to Blu-ray. You know, I could do that.
That's my point. I mean, I think that the having it, you know, being able for like not necessarily Xbox or PSN, but, you know, some way to watch it at home would be good for the people who don't want that, you know, who for those movies who are like, yeah, I can wait, you know, because that would be an initial, you know, money right there, initial,
right?
You know, I mean, not of course, you know, Transformers and, you know, the Dark Knight Rises or whatever, and all those movies, you know, Pirates and, you know, those great, you know, action, you know, blockbuster movies you'll want to see in the theater, but, you know, like maybe the Hangover 2, you may not want to see that in theaters.
Right.
Or, you know, whatever, you know, generic Adam Sandler comedy or whatever you wouldn't want to see in theaters, but you wouldn't mind watching it at home.
Let's be real. The generic Adam Sandler movies, I don't know if you'd want to see them anywhere.
Yeah, that's true. I was trying to think of a different comedian who's big right now. I guess Paul Rudd, maybe?
Maybe.
Will Ferrell, the other guys.
Yeah, I enjoyed that.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, but...
Already.
Anyways, I guess with that, we can continue movie talk with our I recommend section. And this week, it was your pick, Henry?
Yeah, it was my pick this week. This is a movie that I never got a chance to see when it first came out. It's been on my recommendation on my Netflix for I don't know how long. And every time I never listen to Netflix, I need to start listening to them more often. because apparently, I mean, it knows best. Netflix has been 4 for 5 so far as movies they've recommended. The only movie that I didn't really like too much was Rampage, but it was still a pretty good movie to watch, though. I mean, The Fall, it's a very eccentric, artsy movie. If you're familiar with The Cell, with Jennifer Lopez, it's actually directed by the same guy. So the art style is most definitely there. It's not as cryptic and as dark as The Cell, but it still has that kind of ebb and flow when it comes to the actual style and the cinematography. The movie is about it takes place in the 1920s. It basically is about a guy who is, I don't want to give any spoilers away, but he has an ailment, and part of it's mental, part of it's physical. And there's a young girl that he befriends in the process, and she's about maybe 6 years old, 5 or 6 years old or whatever. And he begins to tell her this story. Well, throughout the movie, they play the story out, you know, as the imagination of the little girl and him both playing the story out. Then, of course, things ensue, and he basically tries to get her to help him commit suicide because he's tired of his life at that point. And he's only telling her the story to kind of get her to do this thing. But along the way, he doesn't get his wish. Then he starts to, of course, start feeling for the young girl, and they build a bond and relationship. And then, of course, the story kind of progresses on from there. But as the story is going on in real life, the story is being progressed in the imaginary world as he's telling it. But I thought it was a great movie. I'm real big in art stuff, all those type of movies. So I thought it was good. But what did you guys think of it?
Honestly, go ahead, Stuart.
I was going to say, this is what I was thinking the entire time. What is going on? I don't know what's going on. Why is that man barking like a dog? I don't know. I don't know. He's laughing like a hyena. I don't know.
Yeah.
Hey, I will tell you this. I sit there and I watch the trailer, and I was like, what is going on? It was like, it seemed like it was some type of slow-moving piece, and then stuff started blowing up around, and then people started laughing and dressing up in all type of weird costumes, and I'm like, this is just utterly crazy. I can't follow it at all.
How I thought the movie was, too.
Now I'm interested.
Yeah, for me, right? it totally reminded me of, like, The Princess Bride, the way that was.
I could follow a story in The Princess Bride.
Well, I mean, the way not where so you know here. It was talking, and then it went, and just the way stuff would change, and when the guy who was telling the story would change things, and I mean, I don't know, it just gave me that feel to it, and I rather it really enjoyed it.
And see, I like it because it began as a story that was just his, but then slowly you can see the adaptation of his feelings for the young girl. It became their story, you know, uh-huh. Like, you know, she kind of added her pieces in there. Then, you know, he kind of let her do that, and it became more of their story rather than just his. And, you know, there was a scene in there where she goes to the church or to, I forget what it was or whatever, but she steals one of the little pieces of bread for a communion. And he asks her, he says, are you trying to save my soul? And she's like, huh? And because she doesn't know what he's saying, because she kind of speaks a little bit of broken English. So cute, yeah, too.
I also found it kind of hard to understand what she was saying.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, are you trying to save my soul? And that was so, I guess that kind of coincided with what she was doing in the story, because she wasn't necessarily too naive of what he was trying to do, because, you know, I don't know if you guys remember the part where you know, they were taking the body out and she started crying and going back and forth. Yeah, uh-huh. because she kind of knew, but kind of didn't know exactly what he was doing to her. But I just thought, you know, but this movie, I will tell everybody who watches it, either you're gonna hate it or you're gonna love it. Like, there is no gray area in between this movie, because this movie takes the imagination as far as you can go visually. So, but it kind of brings you back with the real story. But just know that going into it, that, you know, visually it takes your imagination, or the imagination of the director, as far as it could go.
Yeah. The actual story he was telling, I hated the ending, but the end of the movie I liked.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I don't want to spoil anything for anybody, but the end of the story was kind of sucked. I don't know.
Yeah, it was kind of a letdown. But you actually know what I did like about this movie, and on the imaginary side, with the band of characters that they had, it actually reminded me of Final Fantasy IV, and this is what saves that last bit of hope for me, as seeing this movie and seeing where they kind of took the art style and with the different characters and everything. Like, I still think that they can do a live action Final Fantasy movie, not just CG kind of. I think that they can actually do a live action Final Fantasy movie if they wanted to.
See, look at that. That's just a homer right there. Just pulling for pulling for something that I don't think would really resonate. I guess they could do it, but they would probably, well, there are a lot of Final Fantasy fans still here in the U.S., and I'm not really sure why. I'm enjoying 13, but I don't know if that audience, I really don't know if that property lends itself to live action, and if it does, I don't know if that audience is here. Like, Knox, if you wanted to see it, you probably have to import it, because I'd recommend release it in Japan. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know why you like Final Fantasy 13 either, so.
Hey, my 84 hours say it is nice.
Oh, my God.
20-hour tutorial. I can't get through that.
Is that 50 of that running in a straight line?
Actually, yes. Actually, yes. I've been grinding for the last 30 hours.
Oh, my God.
But I've been grinding in a circle, not a straight line. So it's all right. But no, the file seemed unique, and I'm glad it does give you that hope that at least something can be breathing, because it did seem really like it was based in a separate reality, as does Final Fantasy. So I'm being serious. That does kind of lend to your point. So interesting. So The Fall, it's available on Netflix, right?
Yep, Netflix. Yep. And all the movies that we recommend are on Netflix if they don't expire by the time the show goes up. But yeah, all the ones we pick are usually always on Instant Queue. But like I would say, watch the first 30 minutes of it. If you don't like it by the first 30 minutes, you're probably not going to like it at all. So I would say that would be a good test run, is 30 minutes.
The opening credit scene just confuses the hell out of you, and really has nothing to do with the movie.
Yes. Was it the reason how he got in the hospital?
Yeah, because
it doesn't.
When they were pulling, the horse. Remember the 1920s, and they're pulling the thing out of the water, and then they were saying how he, got in his condition. That was kind of the precursor of how he got to that point.
I don't know, the music they added to it really just.
It's all in slow motion.
Yeah, the editing for it was just horrible, I think. But, yeah, definitely a good pick. And next week will be Stuart's pick.
Yeah.
Wonder what he's going to pick.
Yeah, that's a good question. We'll find out.
Tune in next week. I guess next we can get into our geek question of the week.
Yes.
Stuart?
This week's question of the week was, if you could have a sequel to a movie or a video game that doesn't have one and won't, and there won't be one, what would it be?
Mm-hmm. Good topic.
Yeah, the community took a bunch of my answers, man. But, I mean, if anybody knows me, I'm sorry. I just want to finish Shenmue's story so bad.
Goodness. Are you serious?
Oh, man, I'm telling you. I'm sorry, man. The Dreamcast, I'm telling you, Shenmue, I want to finish that story so bad. I want to go kill Landy. I want to see that dude dead. If I can do that.
Didn't you cut your dad down?
Yeah.
Shenmue 2 and 3?
Huh?
There was a Shenmue 2 and 3.
No, it was just Shenmue 1 and Shenmue 2 came out on the Dreamcast, and they reported it over to the original Xbox. They had plans to do a Shenmue multiplayer online, but that got canceled. Then they had plans to do 3, but he never got the funding for it, so it never really got canceled because it never really got incepted. So, you know, but oh, I would love to see that game finished.
So 2 is actually just 1?
No, Shenmue 2 came out on the Dreamcast and the original Xbox. 1 was 1 within itself on the original Dreamcast. Shenmue 3 never existed.
Okay. He's confused again. He sounds like he's watched The Fall again, and he's just confused all over. Okay, Shenmue for you then.
Yeah, Shenmue for me, and, you know, I'll let the community, because they pretty much picked a whole lot of my answers. Shenmue, and that's about it. Everything else is, you know, pretty much had sequels that I really like.
Yeah. I guess for me, I guess 1 would be an old game. I'm not sure if any of y'all ever played it. It was on SNES and Genesis. It was called Zombies Ate My Neighbors. It was.
I've heard of that.
I just can't remember it.
It was an awesome game, and it was a long game too. There was like 50 something levels, and you'd kill zombies and all kind and other creatures. Like there'd be like Frankensteins and mummies and just all kinds of other creatures with, like, you'd start out with a water pistol, and then you'd get like a can of sodas, and then you'd get popsicles to throw at, and just all kinds of stuff, and it was just an awesome game. I mean, I would love to see that come, like, even just that to come for a remake, but you know, just an HD or just to come to the arcade, because it was awesome, and co-op as well. So that was fun, and the other one would be a game called Brave Fencer Musashi. It's a Square Enix game for the PlayStation, and I got it because it had a demo disc for Final Fantasy VII on it. I think it was Final Fantasy VII, and it was it was just an amazing JRPG or action role playing game, yeah. And it was long. There was like, it was one of those discs where it was like 3 or 4 discs.
Nice.
Yeah. So it was just amazing, and not to mention it came with the Final Fantasy VII demo on it. So on one of the discs. So that would be my pick. I guess maybe another Legend of Dragoon. That was an awesome series.
Okay. Can I jump in before Stu jumps into the community responses?
Oh, go ahead.
Got into mine.
Oh, okay. Go ahead. My bad. Sorry, go ahead.
Mine. I actually found a poster for this one. You know, I'm using that for the image. Serenity 2.
Oh,
what?
Wow.
There was talk of it, but you know, it never went beyond talk. So I want a Serenity 2.
Now, what was Serenity? Because I'm not sure.
As a Firefly movie.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, because I thought it said game. Oh, okay, you said movie or game. Okay,
yeah,
I watched the Serenity movie. Okay. Yeah, that was good. That was really good. That was really good. I watched that, too.
And for a game, I would pick Freedom Fighters. I love the crap out of that game.
What system was that on?
It was on PlayStation 2 and Xbox, and I actually played on both.
You may want to explain, because as the crickets told you.
Yeah, nobody's played that game. Yeah, there was a Freedom Fighters 2, but no, I want a sequel. Freedom Fighters 1.
Talking about the Freedom Fighters that was on Xbox?
Yeah. It was kind of like the story was the Cold War never ended and invaded the U.S. Russia invaded the U.S., and actually took over, and there was like a bunch of underground movements, you know, to rise up.
Oh wow, it sounds like another game, Homefront, but it's got Russia.
People were saying, you know, Homefront's going to be, you know, Freedom Fighters 2, and that's why I said, you know, I want a sequel to Freedom Fighters.
Yeah.
Because from when I hear Homefront sucks, so I don't want that to be the sequel.
Oh, you don't want it to be the sequel? You're in denial? You
can't. Well, no, it's not officially the sequel. Like, that's just
spiritual successor.
Yeah, but you know, I don't claim it.
Okay.
Hero sucks.
Well, I want to say, for me, I want to go along the lines with Will. He had a 3 or 4 this game. My sequel that I wish, I have 2 since he had 2. And I didn't really do movies because I'm more of a gamer than a movie watcher. So, first game is Lost Odyssey. If you have not played Lost Odyssey, man, number one, you're missing out on possibly the best turn-based RPG this generation, period.
Agreed.
No qualifying statements, straight up. That's the real deal. And, it's so great. And if you saw the ending, it ended on like a cliffhanger where you're like, oh, man, what just happened? And you really want to see what's going on.
I want to say this. My disc 4 of Lost Odyssey was damaged. Uh-huh. So I never...
Do you need...
I never got to finish it.
I got Lost Odyssey. I'll send you my whole pack. Just keep track of my whole pack.
No, what I'm gonna do is I'm going to get it from Gamefly, and then say that disc will scratch and just swatch out, flip out the discs.
That is such. That game is so well done. It's not.
I really want to finish that game.
Oh my goodness, you're missing it. Because if you made it through disc 2, you deserve to see the ending. Because disc 2, it drug in disc 2. Disc 3 picked back up again, but disc 4 is just all out nuts.
Yeah, I heard that the combat system was a little bit, you know, for when it came out, like they changed a bunch of the things that traditional JRPGs, you know, were not doing, like the skill system and how you hit and attack.
Can I deviate real quick? Can you give me 30 seconds to prove my point on Lost Odyssey?
Go right in.
All right.
You got 75 seconds.
Okay, there you go. Start the timer. All right. Lost Odyssey is an RPG by Miss Walker, produced by Hironobu Sakaguchi, who produced the first 4 to 6 Final Fantasy games. Final Fantasy X, I believe. I believe that was his last game. So he is known for Nobuo Uematsu, the person who did the soundtrack for all the Final Fantasy games, also did the soundtrack for this one. So the pedigree is strong. When you fight, it's a turn-based RPG. So everybody takes turns. But this is what you can do that you can't normally do in a turn-based RPG. When there is equipment, you can equip between every single turn. So you can equip your swords, your rings, everything. You can equip yourself within every single turn. So if you have varying enemies on the screen and you determine who you want to attack, you can equip to attack that one single enemy. It's cool. And then it also has this perfection ring. So, you know, like when you reload, you know, like when you reload in Gears, where if you hit the reload button and you hit it again within that certain margin, then it'll do a fast reload. Well, in this game, when you go to attack after you hit the attack button, these little rings will kind of compress in on the screen. And if you hit the right trigger at the right time and you get the little within the perfect area, you can enhance significantly the amount of damage that you do. So if you have a water ring or you have ice ring and you hit something that has a fire element about it, if you hit it just right, you can like completely kill it with a large critical hit, or if you miss it, you'll still take out some because this is weakness, but not as much. And so this little variable, it popped up essentially almost after every time you equip something that had that added an additional effect, whether it be poison, whether it be debilitating factor. It didn't matter if it had an effect, you were gonna use that bad boy. It had the front row and back row effect. So you put your warriors up front, and then you put the people in the back row. But here's where it separates us. I only got about 10 seconds. You learn your skills because there are immortal characters, and your lead character you play as an immortal. The way you learn your skills, you link them with a mortal character, and the second that you've accumulated enough points as you've linked the skill, then you permanently learn that skill, and then you bank it as a number of skills you can use, and then you can expand the number of skills that you have on you at one time. So if you learn like a white mage spell, you don't even have to be a mage. You could just play as a, but if you learn white mage, black mage spells, if you learn all these other different spells and these other different things, you can accumulate, you can put like 10 together at once and use those 10 anytime you want to, and just use them at your own will, provided you have enough mana.
Man, I'm telling you, dog,
it is completely different from the stuff that you've played before. And on top of that, it looks great. The voice acting is impeccable, and it has that Japanese quirkiness, man. That is solid. But to me, the hallmark of this game are the cutscenes. The cutscenes are where it's at, because there's a piece of DLC that allows you to download and watch all the DLC. And it's a 4-disc game, and the DLs and all the movies, you could just watch all the cinematics back to back by flipping the disc. It took me 2 hours and 15 minutes to watch all the cinematics, and wow. They are beautiful. So yeah, I'm telling
you, Gucci, give that man a sequel.
That's what I'm telling you, man. To me, hey, oh. I'm telling you. So
well,
yeah,
I was gonna say in the story with that. I mean, even you know, it wasn't even in a cutscene. It was when what they call dream sequences, you know, all it is text based. Yes. That mm-hmm. first one, that first dream sequence, I cried because he says, you know, like, you know, he's an immortal. He can't die. So, but mm-hmm. he has kids, you know, he has a kid and his daughter dies in an earthquake. Wow. And he says that it sucks because, you know, he can't tell his daughter who's dying in his arms that he will meet her in heaven because he will not be there.
Yep. And the way they do the short stories,
hits you right there.
It does. It hits you. And the thing is, like, they do the short stories where it's music and it's ambiance. And so, like, as you progress from page to page, because they're about 12 to 15 pages, each short story, and there are about 15 of them. But they're 12 to 15 pages. And as you move from each page, when the tenor of the actual content changes, the music changes. And they seem to have it timed so perfectly to where the moment you hit that point where you read that line, It just seems like, boom, the second you read that line, because it's not voice. The second you read that line, bam, the music changes, background voices come in, and it illustrates a story for you. And no other game has done it, because a lot of games give you audio logs to read, but that stuff is just boring crap. Like, this is serious. And, like, I watched Shane Bettenhauser review it at 1UP, and they do a roundtable review on it. A lot of people, you know what? I choked up when I read it. Like, me personally, I mm-hmm. didn't, but I can see how strong it is. Like, it is really strong. Like I said, Lost Odyssey, best turn-based RPG this generation, hands down. No qualifying statements, nothing. I don't care what you say. I'll stack it up against any turn-based RPG this generation, and it'll shut it down. Period. It'll shut it down. Them strong words. My second game, I don't know if you guys remember it, and I only played the demo of it, but because I was a poor kid, I never really asked for the full game. I was into my sports games, but it was called IQ, Intelligence Q.
Oh, my goodness. Yes.
Do you guys remember that game?
I remember that game mm-hmm. where you're the guy running around, the blocks are coming at you, and right, you have to figure, yeah.
And so it's kind of like a Tetris system, whereas you are standing on this 3D plane that's on you're just standing on floating blocks in the air, in the middle of the air.
Yeah.
Nothing else around you. And what happened is that these blocks come down and you have to set bombs in order to destroy them. But you have to be careful to destroy them, because if you destroy too many at once, then you'll lose a row and then there'll be a hole there. But what happens is that every time a block gets by you and you don't kill it, kind of like Tetris, it messes up your row. the furthest row, the row closest to the screen, because this is 3D, the row closest to the screen, it just dissolves away. So then you have that fewer rows to work with, and they switch up at you, like the speed at which they come. And then it's like, okay, and you only have like a certain number of things. It is such a mind bending game. And I'm telling you, if they did this game with Kinect or Move or something that had a pointer, it would be pretty awesome. But if they did it with, oh man, I'm telling you, Intelligence Cube, if you look for it now, I think I look for a price for it, for a disc. If you try to buy it now, it's like $80.
Yeah.
But it is to me, like, I still remember this game, and I only played the demo and I thought, man, that is so darn cool. I played the demo over and over and over and over and over. Yeah. And I'm telling everybody, if I've been looking on Xbox Live Arcade for ages for somebody to just make a bootleg copy of that game, and nobody has done it. Somebody make it. If you play that game, it will still hold a candle to some of the best puzzle games today and some of the best block games today. I'm telling you, it will. Go ahead, let them know, Knox.
Oh yeah, and also what's made it so cool, and because of the replay value, is because no matter how high your IQ was, it always made you feel like you can get that much more better, because it was always saying, well, your IQ is this. Had you done this, or had you done X, it would have been this. And you're like, oh, okay, well, let me try this out. And you start over again. It's like, it kind of had that Tetris pull, you know, but it was it was much more than that. Like, it, I mean, just the complexity of the different blocks that come down, and you're running around with this little guy, and then, I mean, you see everything on screen. Like Blue said, it's full 3D. I mean, not 3D as in, you know, stereoscopic lens 3D, but it's 3D within the world. And at that time when it came out, there was nothing else like it.
Yeah. I'm telling you, it really is. Like I said, I really haven't seen an immediate puzzle block game like that in a very, very, very long time. I mean, it was awesome. It really was. So those are the two that I would really love a sequel to, because I really think that a lot of people missed out on those experiences in the first place. And don't. Like, those pretty much define, like I said, Lost Odyssey made me a believer in JRPGs. I'm being serious. And in puzzle games, Intelligence Cube set the bar extremely high, and no one has really come even close. I think Portal has been the closest, and I only played the demo of that thing, and I don't even own it, so that goes to speak for it. So
yeah.
But I'll do you one better. It says that it's been on the mobile phones in Japan. What would you say to either a port of it or a remake on a touchscreen phone?
Dude, do you
know? I think
know?
That would work. That would be so good.
My goodness. My battery don't last now. So it'll really be drawn. It'll really be dead, man. Because I'd be on that thing all the time, man. That'd be awesome. I'm telling y'all, man. Intelligence Cube, I need to check that out.
I think I played it. I'm looking at the box art for it, and it looks familiar. And when y'all are saying it sounds familiar. So, but that was just long ago.
Yeah, it was on PS1.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I'm sorry I took so long, y'all, but I had to get those in. Those are great.
Alrighty, just a good thing that this doesn't prove your point, or you would be way over.
I've been disqualified and everything.
Stuart, community feedback?
Okay, I'm going to start out with Facebook. You know, Fadios, you know, I missed him last week because just didn't see the Facebook answers, so I'm doing him first. Yeah, he actually had two. First he said, Mystery Men. If you haven't seen it, you should watch it. It came out too early. It would be huge today.
Oh, I love that movie. That movie was awesome.
Yeah, that was a great movie.
I'm not sure if a sequel would be great, though.
I don't know. But every time I go bowling, you know, I always think of the skull in the bowling ball. Every time. Yeah. I don't know why. Then he also said, a sequel to Spider-Man 2. You know, Spider-Man 3 doesn't exist in his mind. 1 was great, and 2 is still one of the best Spider-Man superhero 3? Movies ever.
Right.
I would love to see a true sequel with the real Venom, not the crap in 3. I agree. I've said this before on this show. Venom is my favorite villain of all time, and I was incredibly, incredibly disappointed with Spider-Man 3.
Me too. Venom is one of the best and one of the coolest villains of all time, personally, I believe. And he's one of the best arch nemeses, and he was just utterly disregarded in Spider-Man 3, or that movie in Fadio's mind that does not exist. And like, you cannot have the Sandman and Venom in the same movie.
Yeah, like, I mean, Venom, I think it was done very, 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 very good. You know, as far as the CG was concerned, how they had him, you know, adapted with like a smaller character, then of course him adapting to like the bigger character once he got to the symbiote suit. I just think that Venom, he needs his own movie, like, period. You know, you can't chug, you know, three different villains inside one movie and expect to get it, you know, to get it right, especially with a character such as large and as mentally, I mean, taxing as Venom.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The number on the movie does not equal the number of villains in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Paris from Uncle Gamer, he has it right. He said that the true way to do it is to, you know, the first Spider-Man to introduce Eddie Brock and all that, and then the second one, you know, Spider-Man finds the suit, and then the third one, at the end of the second one, he gets rid of the suit, and then the third one, you know, at the end of the second one, the suit goes to Eddie Brock, and then that's the third one, is him fighting Venom. Mm-hmm. I think that's how it should be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
Sp- Spider-Man just has such a thick history. I mean, it's really hard to fit all that in. But yeah, I mean, I agree though. That's kind of how it should be, because that's how I remember it happening. So
yeah, I do gotta say the third Spider-Man movie did have some scary moments. I mean, that dance scene was just
that was pretty scary.
Yeah, with him walking on the sidewalk, and yeah, that was horrible.
But I know we have a lot of other feedback, Stuart.
Yes, we do. Next is Dark DJ. He says Shadowrun would be my top pick. Yeah, I would love to see Shadowrun done right, because that had potential, but it just didn't go anywhere, and nobody's tried to do anything like it since.
Has a very small yet dedicated fan base, though.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. And he said he would also love to see a direct sequel to Final Fantasy VII. No, 8. Sorry, I can't count.
What?
Alrighty.
I thought he said 7, but nope, it says 8 right here.
I never played 8, so...
I started at 9, actually.
Oh, really? That's when you started?
Yeah, that's...
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm terribly sorry for you.
I really did. I liked it.
Mm-mm. No.
I started on 7, and I ended on 7 disc 1. And then at the end of disc 1, and I picked back up again on 13. So that's where I'm at on Final Fantasy.
Dark DJ is yelling at us right now on new stream.
he agrees with me. 9 is also good. So,
but he thinks 8's good, and all I've heard about 8 was that it was crap. That's all I've heard until now.
That's because it was. But proceed.
Yes, that's his opinion, and his opinion's valid.
Okay. Polka Cookie. Unfortunately, I'd say Mirror's Edge. Unfortunately, because it doesn't look like it won't be getting the sequel it deserves.
Yeah, that was one of the ones I was going to choose, too.
Mm-hmm. And my sister was actually playing that today. So,
just think if they make a small refinement to the control scheme and have you doing less button presses and over-the-hand flips with the controller, I think they can make it good. I mean, it's already a good game the way it is, but some of those sequences of button presses and combinations they have you doing, I mean, your hand looks like a pretzel afterwards.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's one of the games that really tried to do something new, released the same year as Dead Space, new IP for EA, y'all remember that. Two new IPs in the same year, they were criticized for it. And that's one of the games I actually let my son play. And, I mean, there is a little language in there. But it's not extremely bad, and but he really, really, really liked it. And, I mean, he still plays it all the time. I mean, just because it's so much different from anything else out there.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I have a feeling, you know, it may not get the sequel it deserves.
And next on my list is someone called Lazberry, but we're going to skip him.
Oh, okay, I got you. Yeah. Nah, it's all good.
Okay, Forgetful. Conker's Bad Fur Day and Shenmue. So.
There you go.
Conker's Bad Fur Day was awesome.
Yeah, and I was thinking that Conker's Bad Fur Day got a sequel, but nope, it was a remake.
Yeah, it was a remake, and they were thinking about doing, you know, typical fashion, a card game for it, but they never made it, so. Which doesn't qualify as a sequel.
Yeah. Okay, Patriot 1030. Super Mario RPG, Legend of the Seven Stars, tied for turn-based RPG. I hearts it.
Hell yeah, that was an awesome game. I'm not sure if you guys ever played it.
No,
I played a little bit of it.
Oh, it was so good, and it's actually one of the hardest games to find an emulating ROM for. I mean, I have not found one that actually works right, because I've wanted to play it again, and it was just so good. But yes, I agree with that.
Okay, and then finally we have Deshane Vox. Game for this gen, Too Human. Game of last gen, Breakdown.
I never played Too Human. It wasn't Breakdown, that other first-person kind of fighting game or whatever? It's like a first-person fighting game. It looks sort of like Tekken meets Mirror's Edge, but just with no running, like fighting. I think that's what Breakdown
was.
It was a first-person fighting game. Yeah, because I remember seeing that. I never played either one, though. I watched the trailers on Xbox Live of Two Human, where I think it was supposed to be based on Norse mythology, loosely, mm-hmm. or whatever. And it never really intrigued me. But
I played it. It wasn't
never played it before.
That great. I mean, I played it. I finished it. It was a unique take. It would have felt better if they wouldn't have tried to innovate and kind of levy the attacks to the right analog stick. If they would have just kept it as button presses, I think it would have been fine. I really did.
Oh, they pulled a Blade 2 on you. Never put your attacks on any stick. That's no.
I love Two Human. I wanted a sequel to that as well.
And then he also has a movie called Starkey's Machine, or Sharky's Machine. Sorry, I don't know. I've never seen that movie.
Me either.
Leave it to Deshane. So is that it? Is that all the community?
Yes, that is all the community. I do believe.
Alrighty. Tune in next week, or tune in on Twitter, actually. Sometime this week we'll have the question of the week.
Yes.
So be sure to answer, you know, Facebook, Twitter, you know, or you could send us an email if you want, or whatever. I guess, with that, we are the Geeks for the Win. We're part of the Open Forum Radio Network, one of the best podcast networks out there. There's something for everybody, and I do mean something for everybody. All the shows are totally different. I mean, no two shows seem to be alike, in my opinion, and I think that's a good thing. There's many ways to contact us. Facebook, Twitter, you know, The Geeks FTW. You can send us an email at thegeeksftw@gmail.com. You can leave us an iTunes review, which, you know, we haven't had one in a while. So, you know, someone, you know, if you wouldn't mind, I know we have more iTunes listeners than the number of reviews, because I do see the numbers. So, you know, help us out. You can check out the Open Forum Radio Network forums, you know, link on our site or openforumradio.com. You can watch the live show on Ustream every Monday. We usually get things started around 7:30 Central Standard. That's when the pre-show kind of starts. We normally start the actual show a little after that. But and all those ways can be, you know, you can contact us all the different ways on the Android app, which is on the Android Marketplace. It's $1.99. You get bonus content. You know, we've been giving out pretty lengthy bonus content the last couple of weeks. So definitely, if you got an Android app and you want to support the show, definitely get that. And with that, I guess we can go to shout-outs. Larry, shout-outs?
Yes. Thanks to all three of you fellas for having me on. I want to give a shout out to my wife for putting up with me this evening, laughing and being all loud and going on and on about stuff. So shout out to everybody over at Open Forum Radio at the network, everybody over at the Geeks Gone Raw network, everyone who is doing what we're doing, who sits behind the mic and sacrifices time, energy, and resources to do this thing, and I guess a shout out to Capcom for bringing back our Resident Evil 4 and Code Veronica. We'll see. We'll see. But that's all I got, man. Thanks. I appreciate it.
Alrighty. Stuart?
You know, shout out to the writers, you know, Cookie, Elf, Knox, who finally has his own information on the About Us page. That was my fault. Dark DJ too. Shout out to Larry for being on the show. It was great having you.
Thank you. No problem.
Shout out to Japan, because they're still having problems over there with the water problems they're having now. That's terrible.
Well, is that it?
That's all I got.
Alrighty, Henry?
Oh, man, as always, you know, shout out to you guys. Shout out to Mr. Blue Man, Larry, for coming on the show. Shout out to Stuart, better late than never, you know. shout out to everybody, man, that I haven't talked to in a while, man. Blue hit me up and he was like, man, I haven't talked to you in a while. And that made me think about everybody, man. Shout out to Anthony Alex of the Angry Man Podcast. Shout out to Scar, Sherry, Scoba, Big Pimpin', just everybody that I haven't talked to in a little while. It's been sort of a transition with this new job. It's really, really busy. Speaking of the job, shout out to people at the job who's been downloading and listening to the show on iTunes. Shout out to Jason Wright. Shout out to William Owens, who will be going with me to the Halo MLG event coming up this weekend, which I will get video of, and we'll try to get it posted to the website. Me and the wife is going, and him and his wife is probably going. And, oh, and shout out to Jonathan Lindsay also, too. Shout out to OFR community as a whole. Shout out to Sarcasm Live as a whole. Shout out to PGR, Tag, everybody in the community, Extended and Outward, and y'all know what it is. Shout out to the world.
Alrighty. I guess for me, shout out to Larry, you know, for coming on and for short notice as well. Shout out to Ace Black and Knucklehead. I've been playing Crysis 2 with those two and have just been having a blast. And you guys who are interested in it should really pick it up, and because you won't regret it. Trust me. There's a reason why Ace is hyping this so much. Shout out to Scarfinger, Mongo Bear, Paladin, and for I was playing some Halo Reach with them this past week, and shout outs to Deshane and Vital for, because I was playing some Bulletstorm with them. And I guess, you know, shout outs to the community. You know, I look forward to playing many games in the future. Hopefully Brink will be one of them. And with that, I guess, shout outs to Fadios, because we did miss his question last week, and he did have a really good one, or his answer to the question last week, and he did have a good one. His answer was a Marvel RPG done by BioWare.
Yep.
There's not much more I can say more than I agree. I mean, that would just be awesome. You know, Marvel RPG, I would love it. I guess with that said, this has been episode 38 of The Geeks for the Win, and we will see you next time.
Bye.
Adios.
Holla back, player.